Street Smart Podcast, back day two of OTC 2023. I'm sitting here with founder and CEO of Opla, Elvin Mamadov, and their Vice President of Business Development. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Kieran Gibbs. So I'd said to them before we started that really podcasts get their credibility from the amount of accents that guests have, and I'm killing it. This one's the best because we've got two accents, and they're very strong. So I really appreciate you guys taking time to come over and sit and kind of tell the story of Opla and kind of how it got its founding. And also, congratulations, guys. Winning two awards.
Thank you, man,
that's awesome. So thank you guys for being a part of this.
No, for sure. That's our pleasure.
So let's start at the beginning. So you guys didn't just, Opla's 3 years old, right?
Three and a half.
Yeah. And so you guys, I mean, you guys have been in industry longer than 3.5 years, I'm guessing.
That's true.
So, yeah. So where'd you kind of get your start in the industry? And before we get there, Elvin, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
Well, I never thought of this, honestly. I was thinking that, you know, I should be an engineer. So I went to school for that and working in, especially like the managed pressure drilling site. And I was making a joke with some of the friends when we were working together that, hey, you know, one day we're going to start our own MPD company. But I was not serious. And then years later, they came back and said, like, you were sane about it.
Yeah,
and
I'm
like,
hey, remember when you said?
Yeah, I know. And I was like, no, honestly, this has happened, but I didn't mean it for 7 years ago. Right. I wasn't planning for it.
So as a kid, you didn't think at all, you know, when I grow up, I want to be this? You're number two on my podcast, by the way. It didn't have that.
Well, the answer is kind of a little complicated that. I mean, that leadership was there since, like, you know, the early ages and even the school and stuff like that, right? Like when the teacher leaves the classroom, you know, although I was the youngest one in the classroom, was asking me to oversee everyone and stuff like that. So you could see that, you know, it's coming. But I mean, I never planned that far away. So, you know, usually the style that I go with, let it to flow, like naturally, if the thing's going to happen. I mean, you work hard and you get deserved back, basically.
That makes sense. How about you, Kieran?
Well, from my side, I grew up in the UK.
No kidding.
Yeah. Well, that's my accent. I get mistaken for Australian quite a bit, but I am English.
The only other one I would have guessed would be New Zealand, which is basically
a lot of people. But, you know, I grew up in a small town, Great Yarmouth, and it's supported the southern North Sea gas fields, and my entire family worked offshore. My father, my brothers, my older brothers, my cousins, my uncles, and I adamantly said I wasn't going to go into the industry. I'm not going to travel. I don't want to be away from home. I'm going to be a police officer. That's what I wanted to be when I was a kid, and obviously that didn't happen. And I followed in their footsteps and ended up where I am now, with a long transition from starting off as a data acquisition technician in the North Sea, working for a Canadian company. I guess I have a habit of working for Canadian companies. Yeah. This will be the fourth one. Kind of went from there, worked throughout the world. Had 17 years at Weatherford, from supervisor level all the way into kind of product management. And then came to the US, actually started my own, followed kind of Elvin followed me, and with a startup, had my own startup, MPD company, Stasis Drilling Solutions, in 2015, and transitioned away from Stasis. So I think for coming into Opla, with my experience with the startup and some of the things we saw that in the industry that needed correcting, and we needed innovation, and that's one of the things that kind of drew me to Opla, and the team as well. I think a lot of the other companies, they kind of get stale with their technology. Everybody had, you know, one MPD company from another. There's no difference. Especially even on the side of the iron, everybody has the same rotating head. Everybody has the same choke package. Everybody has the same software. And I think with Opla, what I've seen is everyone's kind of come from different backgrounds. There's nobody that's really, you know, apart from one or two of the senior management team, a lot of the R&D guys and the software guys that came up with the PMD and OplusMart, which we won the awards for, they came from outside of the industry, but they didn't know what MPD was. And I think that's what's refreshed Opla, and I think that's where a lot of the other people lack, that they're, you know, they've got great technical minds, but they don't have no fresh ideas. And I think that's been a big thing with Opla, having those guys come in.
The interesting thing, too, about the industry is that, and I've been in it for 20 years. I was born and raised in Midland, Texas, so that's what you do is you get into oil and gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't do like you. I wasn't like, I'm not doing that. I just sort of like, well, this is what I'm doing, I guess. But the industry itself seems somewhat reluctant at times, not as much anymore, to embrace technology. And you know, these ways that we're doing it work, so we're just going to keep doing it, even though it might be the long way to do something. I think it's great that companies like Opla are out there and they're kind of pushing that boundary and moving that threshold, and companies are starting to embrace it more and more. Now, you both worked at Weatherford at some point, right? Is that where you met one another?
Yeah, we worked with Weatherford, but different countries. So I worked with Weatherford Canada mostly.
Okay.
But MPD industry is pretty small, so we all get to know each other. Like even the one that in Asia Pac works and versus North America, you still get connected. It's one of the youngest technology in drilling sector, honestly. So it's a very closed loop, you know. Pretty much everybody knows each other.
Yeah, the oil and gas industry is a small community anyway, which is weird. And then you guys have even a smaller niche in that.
Yeah, yeah.
So the founding of Opla, how did that come about, Elvin?
Well, I'll take it a little bit back before then Opla, like just a little bit of a, you know, talk about the MPD itself, you know, and the UBD, underbalanced drilling. Well, generally the whole thing started in 1956 with the rotating control devices. Mm. And then they invented underbalanced drilling for, you know, to drill the subnormal formations that where you cannot really pump the, you know, just a regular water. It will, you know, frack through and then leak it out to the well, and then that's where the underbalanced drilling started. And then just last 15 years the MPD was born out of UBD. So what we think that most of the MPD companies have missed it is to revise that technology specifically for MPD purpose, and then just basically cut it out some of the, you know, equipments from UBD and continued on in MPD, which was not a great fit for MPD itself because it was too much of equipment, too much of people on location, because that's what they used to do on a UBD.
Right.
We used to, I should call. And then, you know, for years and years, it's one of the youngest technology in drilling industry itself, the MPD, just 15 years and has been, you know, ramping up like every 5 years of different milestones. The softwarization came, digitalization came in about 5 years ago by a secure drilling company called. And then, you know, but still the equipment used to be like left from the UBD days. So it was still three loads of, you know, equipment arrives on location, which is half of the rig. And then, but then they performed the managed pressure drilling, not UBD anymore. And I worked about 11 years with Weatherford, same as Kieran, started in the field as a, you know, operator, supervisor, field engineer, team lead engineering, engineer manager, technical sales, and then business unit manager. So pretty much got to see all different levels and different angles, and from the sales perspective, from the technical, from engineering, from the operation perspective. And basically 2019, I kind of decided that I think, you know, that 15 years of MPD journey with all of us by the old MPD companies has to change, because somebody has to design the specific device, equipment, and convert this method to the one single device. Like instead of having three loads of package, could be done with the coffee table size, you know, equipment that should revolutionize this industry, that, you know, and open up a lot of doors. Because what was the hurdle on MPD side always been, it's for performance drilling. You drill faster, but the economically feasible side is with bringing three loads of package and, you know, 2 to 3 or 4 people out there, it's measurable that, you know, from economical perspective, that does it make sense to do it or not? I'm a believer of the MPD is going to be a part of the conventional drilling one day, just like how Top Drive is now, how BOP is now, which used to be a BOP used to be used for only high pressure wells back then, and then, you know, now it's mandatory, it's everywhere, so, you know, nobody drills without the BOP,
right? Or does service with BOP, does, you know, workover, you know,
exactly
BOP out there.
Exactly. So what was stopping MPD to be a part of the conventional drilling to be used everywhere was the footprint and the automation and the people that requires to operate.
So when you're saying footprint, you mean just the assets that had to be on ground during the actual work. So that was the limiter.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, now going back to the Opla, in 2019, basically, you know.
Outstanding time to found a company.
Exactly. And, yeah. And then, you know, seeing that the COVID is coming, like, this is great.
Yeah.
We should
do it
now.
I can't wait to do this. This is a perfect time.
Yeah. If it doesn't fail through the COVID, it will never fail. This is our chance.
I mean, there's one, that is one way to look at it for sure.
Yeah. No, it was, going back to that, so it was a tough days. But anyways, 2019, basically I quit and started off in Opla Energy as a founder. And then, you know, lots of good teammates or ex-teammates joined me, and then we went to investment, you know, rounds,
right.
and one of our parent companies, Citadel Drilling, decided to invest into the idea and then support us. And we started in Canada in 19, and our first operation was in December 19, and we entered the U.S. market about a July 2020, and then since then we've been growing, you know, North American wise.
That's great. So what did he say to you to get you to come over to Opla? How did he convince you to say, you know, hey, this is going to change the world?
Didn't really have to convince me. I mean, from what I'd seen from Opla, what I'd learned about Elvin and the team, the biggest thing is the culture within Opla. You know, we have our core values, and we you know, embrace those. And it's a very different atmosphere compared to any other company, and I got that feeling when I sat down with Elvin. You know, it wasn't really the initial sell, wasn't the technology, it was Opla as a company, and who we are, who we want to be, and we want to change the industry. And then I looked at the technology, and obviously, you know, it, my eyes opened up straight away. I was like, you know, this is so different from anything else that's in the industry. It's where we need, you know, the industry needs to be. We need automation. We need to take guys off the rig, and you know, that looking at the, you know, everyone's now into ESG and carbon, reducing carbon emissions, and that's, you know, the way the industry is moving towards. That, you know, I saw a huge future for the PMD and Opla, and kind of where I wanted to be. It was a very easy decision.
I think it's great that you mentioned that the culture was more persuasive than the tech. And the reason that that's important is because, you know, technology is ever changing, and it's going to be one thing today and it's a totally different thing tomorrow. But if the culture is terrible, that technology might as well not even exist.
Well,
so that's a great thing. That's a great thing that you found.
It's a very good point. It's the technology that we do it. And, you know, it's the team that comes in and develops, and they can redevelop, because technology never ends. You just have to keep
That's right.
The pace.
It just iterates.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not that you bring the technology or you build the technology, then it's done. So, you know, it's the people that the culturally have to. Like, I mean, it's one of the discussions that I keep bringing up. I think I'm more proud of the Opla's culture than the technology. I mean, we win Spotlight or so just yesterday, and we have done a lot of the first in oil and gas, like first Internet of Things, IoT in a drilling technology. So that Spotlight was one of them.
Sean and Dave mentioned IoT stuff, and that's fascinating. IoT is amazing, and to start in seeing that move into the industry is going to revolutionize things.
Yeah, it's like a machine learning itself there. There's AI, there's a, you know, adaptive control of, you know, ML, that, you know, the autonomous control of the choke itself, you know, pure electrification and so on. But like I said, like, technology is great. That's what we do. That's what we build. But it's the people that builds it. And it's the same people that builds it that have to bond together with the company culture. So
when you started thinking through founding Opla? Obviously, you have all of the traditional concerns about founding a business, you know, funding, the product, what service are we looking to, you know, solve or fill. Culture is a key component of that, like we're talking about. When you were founding Opla, was that a strategic thought in your mind? I've got to form this culture. And if so, what were some of the benchmarks in terms of culture that you wanted in place before you pulled the trigger and brought people in?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, with my mentors' advices and so, and which goes back to the investment side, that, you know, once somebody or corporation invests in and they assign a mentor and they want to make sure that, you know, what they have, you know, throughout the investment, all other investments they have done, and they what have they less, you know, lesson and learned, that, you know, what a true startup, successful startup supposed to be. It was definitely a put in plan, and it was a strategically thought. We even invited the third party, very specialized companies who assist the company, the startup company or the team, that, you know, they find themselves like, who are we? What's our culture? You know, just 5-6 people who we got into the room and spent almost like a week there. And then all we had to decide is, who are we?
Yeah.
What's our culture? And who we want to be? And who we want others, the external parties, could be clients, vendors, partners, or so on, or just public, how we wanted them see us as, right? Like, you know, what do we represent? What's our culture? Basically, spending a week there in a room and then figuring that out. And then just pretty conventional method, just the blackboard, and we're just typing, and, you know, we say, like, well, in our culture called VICE, it's a W, you know, square I and square S and E, so we, because that's what the most important part of Opla, because we're never I, it's we. And integrity, innovation, safety square stands for, you know, physical safety and emotional safety, because we want to make sure that everybody who works at Opla emotionally safe. So nobody's worried about their job. Nobody's worried about, like, if I reject or I say this is not a good idea, I might get fired or so. So you're creating that, you know, next generation work environment for everyone, that, you know, everybody feels very comfortable, and that's where the creativity starts. So everybody becomes not creative and tries to contribute more than just, you know, try to hide or say, well, I'm going to skip. I'm not going to say this is not a good idea or so. So there's no hierarchy. Everybody from bottom to top, top to bottom, same level, and have a right to say that I think we're doing wrong here. And we're like, well, let's talk about it. What's wrong about it? And then that's what makes us we, because that's how we learn and that's how we innovate.
Absolutely.
Well, last one was an excellent story. I don't want to miss
right,
that.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, you missed a letter, and that one probably is the best one. So excellence, yeah. I mean, that goes without saying. Obviously, that's something that Opla has created. I mean, you guys, culture-wise, for a company at its founding to think about that at the onset, I think that gets missed a lot.
Yeah.
Because you're so focused on all of the sort of nuts and bolts it takes to launch a company that you forget other people that are going to have to work here.
Yeah, and companies that focus on only on technology misses the culture, the what that also doesn't go well.
Correct.
Because, you know, it becomes a little bubble, right? Like, you go up and invent something, but then things get destroyed and doesn't, you know, strategically grew as planned, because the culture is not there.
Right, and I think what you said in terms of, you know, emotional safety, being able to say, hey, I don't think this is the way it should go, or whatever, without fear,
yeah,
is important. And I've seen in companies in the past that you're exactly right. People will either not say anything, or they'll just confirm the boss's bias to go with the flow, and that doesn't help anybody.
And I think it's, you know, 2023, most of the oil and gas company, it's time for change, because, you know, we have to keep up with the technology. We have to keep up with the culture, and as industry, that's how we can be a transitioning to a successful industry altogether.
Absolutely. So, what you guys are doing is a unique solution in this space. So Kieran, how's that been for you going out into the market and trying to explain, you know, what separates Opla and how you guys are able to differentiate your solution?
I mean, I've been with Opla, it's my 1-year anniversary today.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And coming from working myself and having my own company, my own MPD company, and you know, it took a while for people to adapt. Obviously, the you know the being a smaller independent company, you're up against you know the big three, the you know, Weatherford, Schlumberger, Halliburton. You know, people remember those colors. We're not that color. Those guys are always first in the door, the ones who win the awards. So you're always up against that. I think with Opla, once people open their eyes and actually understand the PMD and what we're trying to do with it, and where we're transitioning from, and the trust in the IoT, the remote operations, that's the biggest thing. Especially in West Texas, very old school, lots of people have been in the industry for a long time. Trying to sell them on this new technology sometimes is really difficult. And we've really started to make some ground now, especially in West Texas. We should have, I think, 6 or 7 PMD units out in that area, and the rest are in the Haynesville. But we're transitioning from MPD just being there to mitigate troublesome formations or tight windows to the performance drilling, as Elvin said. The more we drill with the PMD, obviously with the machine learning in there as well, the more powerful the system's going to be. But having that data is really key in that basin to show operators, hey, you know, we drilled a well for this client. It was a Wolfcamp D well. Previously, it was 18 to 20 days. You know, we introduced PMD. We lowered the mud weight. We knocked 2 or 3 days off the first well. Mm-hmm. And as we move forward and optimize those wells, and we've gone from an 18-day well down to a 6-day well. So once you start gathering that data, and the more data we present to these clients, and obviously the more clients that adapt the technology, the faster PMD is going to grow in the basin. That's been the biggest thing is, you know, we're transitioning from, there's a lot of other service providers that will come out with what we call poor boy MPD, which is basically an orbit valve and a rotating head. And you know, they're not actually using MPD to its full capability. They might use it now and again on a trip just to for some formation stability. And again, the driller's running this system, and half the time he's not going to want to interact with the system. I've been to rigs where there's MPD systems, and I've been up to the rig floor and spoke to the driller directly, and he may be a new driller or someone who's just come on tower, and he has no idea the MPD system's even on the rig.
Yeah, he also has nothing else going on. So no,
he doesn't want anything to do with MPD.
Right, that's right. You know, he's got a few other things to focus on.
Yeah, and that was one of the big things, obviously, when Opla's starting with Citadel. Elvin and Dan Hafath, the president of Citadel, and they sat down, and one of their biggest things from Citadel was, we do not want our drillers to have anything to do with MPD. They're on the rig to do their job, and you know we don't want to take their focus away from drilling. That's what they're there for. We don't need them operating an MPD system. So that's where Opla came up with the IoT and the remote operations to take that away from the rig floor. And that's one of the biggest things now is getting people to trust that technology. That's kind of one of the biggest hurdles that we face on the business development side.
Yeah, oil and gas is that way in general. Yeah. You know, at Wildcat, we've got a few proprietary tools. We've got some patents, and they were patents on existing technology similar to what you guys have. It's just an innovation on a whipstock or, you know, something like that. And to go out and get someone to give you a shot at that, because if it doesn't work, the cost is amazing. It's unbelievable for them to bear the cost of a failed test, right? So it's hard to get traction. How beneficial was it to have a parent company like Citadel Drilling? Did you use them as a test ground, and then you could then deliver true data?
Well, wouldn't call them test run, but
well, you know what I mean.
To be able to develop actual data to go out
to market.
They've been super helpful. They've been, you know, since we started, they've made a lot of other steps through successfully as a Canadian company, becoming transitioning to be, you know, moving to the Permian or so, and setting the stone and building that reputation out there. So we had a great example story to follow. That was a number one huge, you know, help to us as Opla when we started. And obviously from there, you know, you're building a technology that to integrate to the rig, and you have a, you know, full access to the rig. itself and people who works on the rig, so you can actually technically interview and understand what's the best for the rig. So that was one of the huge benefits. So we as we came from an MPD side, not the rig contractor side, we knew what MPD world thinks that MPD is supposed to be, but we got that ability and chance to hear from the rig contractor where all the MPD companies trying to integrate their technology, to hear out and say like, hey, well, this is how it's going to work. It's like, no, that's not good for us. That doesn't work for us. We don't want driller to do this. We got driller to focus on his stuff because he's already overwhelmed and so on, right? Like, everybody comes and puts one screen on a dockhouse and says, well, we'll get the driller to do it. And then they call back and go home and put on a brochure that it's unmanned. Well, it's not unmanned. It's driller manned, right?
That's right.
It's still driller operating, and it's not really what the brochures is actually, you know, reflecting the reality.
Right.
And then we started listening to them. We're like, well, this is a very valid point. Like, I mean, truly, if we're going to do innovation and truly we're going to do something different and integrate to the rig that everyone enjoys, and it really turns out to be a performance drilling and you know, creates that value out there for the client, for the contractor, and for the MPD and for everyone else, it was a huge benefit for us to be able to partner with Citadel in that way. And I think that one of the biggest reason of our success is the partnering with Citadel, because we started in 19 to build and research and develop, do R&D, a new MPD technology that is perfectly integrated to the rig and operates unmanned, like true unmanned, autonomously, like itself, on the rig, and having full access to the rig contractor. Everyone from bottom to top, everybody was supporting, and everybody, we had a full access. Just, you know, just call someone, pick up a phone saying that, hey, what do you think about this? And there's like, well, kind of, or giving you true feedback, because, you know, nobody's worried about if they say, well, this is not going to work. That's what we wanted to hear, and that's what they wanted to us to able to hear and understand that and accept that as a feedback.
That's great. And that's invaluable.
It is.
It really is.
It is. And I mean, there's a lot of reasons that what set the Opla successful, and starting with the Opla team themselves as a first, as a, you know, team. But I think one of them is also Citadel being a partner with us.
So I think that's great. And I have one final question, and it's a little, someone told me to ask this question, so I didn't come up with it on my own, but where'd the name Opla come from?
Okay. It's a bit of a long story. I don't know if that was a, basically, I have been called as a nickname in university and high schools and in elementary school as Opla. And the main reason, I think it stands in Italian, a perfect. I'm not Italian. When I was a kid at school, I had an OCD, so I still have a little bit. And has been getting better. And
trust me, I have a lot of it. There's a lot of it. If anything gets out of whack a little bit, it will affect the rest of my day, probably.
Yeah.
So I get it.
I didn't want to mix my books with the other students or so, and my family knew it, that I have such problem, and everyone else. So they got me a stamp, like book stamp. And I think my dad got it from Italy. That's why it's Italian word. And I was stamping all my books open on the first page so I can differentiate my book and find it easily. So then it turned out to be a couple of years later. So when I was like, well, if somebody opens the book, says Opla, I was like, oh, this is Elvin's.
Oh, wow. Basically, you trained the people to know this is my book.
Exactly. if I'm looking for my own book, and I was looking for on the first page of Opla stamp.
Yeah.
And basically what happened is it was 2019. I had to come up a name. I was like, what should be the name? And I started like, well, can't be better than Opla.
No. With that story, no. It can't be.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. I'm always fascinated how people come up with names, right? Like, so, you know, my podcast, Street Smart, my last name's Overstreet.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, the vanity in me says, let's go ahead and add street to it. And then, you know, entrepreneurs and people that found businesses, they've got to be very street smart to get it done.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people in this industry in general, whether you're a founder or you're you know, an executive or even a driller or whatever you are, you've got to understand and be able to do that. So I've always found naming stuff fascinating. And then I had someone tell me, you got to find out how they named Opla.
Yeah, and then I don't know if anybody mentioned about the logo itself or not.
No.
You know, if you guys pay attention to our logo, it's O-E on one letter and also E there. But then if you rotate 45 degrees, you see CD, Citadel Drilling. Hmm. That was also, we put quite a bit of time.
That's brilliant.
And Citadel's logo is just CD, and ours is OE. Yeah. But if you rotate.
You've got them both in there?
Yeah.
That's great. So here we are, 2023. You guys are award-winning. You guys are award. It's a.
That happened yesterday, too.
Yeah.
So here it is, 2023. You guys are award-winning company. I believe you said the first that you could find in 50 years that had won two awards.
That's correct.
At OTC, which is outstanding, obviously. Where is Opla headed?
I'll take a first shot, but I would like to also give a time for Kieran to mention about it. Where is Opla heading? I think we have... I always have a motto at Opla. I keep saying that, you know, we should be the company that we compete with ourselves when it comes to technology. So, you know, we never stop innovating. We never stop, you know, building a better service and getting, you know, close to that excellence. It's a very tough definition that what's the excellence. So, I mean, it's never ending point that you keep following up, right? We are continuously building up. This is maybe and for sure is not the last award we will be winning. We'll be coming up soon. Maybe we'll be podcasting next year on a spotlight again with you about the, you know, our another news technology that we're currently building. That you know,
I have no doubt you will be.
Yeah, but we are definitely moving on a following the trend worldwide and trying to bring most of the innovation that any other industries are fallen to bring it to the oil and gas, such as IT or, you know, space technologies or so.
AI,
exactly, right? So at the moment, I just want the first time release the new information about what is Opla is going to launch or have launched maybe, is we are building a, like, you know, the system is fully automated. It's autonomous. It works with IoT. And we have just AI-based voice engine have integrated to our system. Mm-hmm. So you can actually call, hey PMD, change your ECD to 12.5 PPG.
Wow.
And then you can actually talk to it in the back house. Small detail I'm really, you know.
That technology is hard to pull off.
It is.
Because I met with a company a while back that has a product they developed for NASA, and part of it was where you were like a halo device, you know, you see, like, it was really cool. But they were having a real tough time getting the, you know, the Hey Siri to work, basically.
Yeah.
So that's a great innovation.
It is. We've been training the system. We've been testing it. It's a great stage that I can talk about it, and it's been very well tested, and it works, you know, any accent.
Oh, and, wow! Well, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. I tested myself.
That's important.
Yeah.
But yeah. So breaking news here.
Yeah.
That's great, man. So I think that's a fantastic innovation.
So it's just one of the small that what our R&D is working on. But generally, that I just wanted to give an example that what are we after, you know, this spotlight and from the technology perspective. But we continuously competing with ourselves, trying to make sure that, you know, we don't, you know, this journey doesn't end here. So we continuously keep going on and you know, making this industry a really cool industry to work in and be enjoying the part of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that as we increase the technology, younger people want to be involved in it.
That is
because it just is inherent in that. So that's awesome. So, Kieran, what do you can't say ditto.
No. From my side, I see as we transition with this technology, and it's very powerful what Opla are doing and what we have, that I think we're going to see once we're on, we have more PMDs out, we're on different rigs with different drilling contractors, I think part of the next phase will be to actually start looking at integrating other services on the rig into Opal's software platform. So eventually we may, you know, using our autonomy and our AI, be able to control other systems on the rig. And I think a lot of drilling contractors will start, once they see what we have, then I think the drilling contractors will be coming to us and asking, hey, you know, can we look at automation, you know, for the driller? Is it possible to take the driller off the rig? I know other drilling contractors and service providers are potentially looking at that. But I could see that, you know, being a thing of the future, having the driller and, you know, anyone else on the rig, and just having, you know, a minimal crew there for any maintenance. But that's where I kind of see potentially Opla, a direction for Opla to go in. And obviously with growth of the company, you know, technology, you know, the US market's a great base for it. A lot of other countries are really suffering, especially in our kind of niche market with MPD. They're not having the technologies. I've had some good conversations here with you know, a lot of Middle Eastern countries, and you know, they're asking, they're begging for new technology to come into their country. You know, they're using systems that are, you know, now 15, 20 years old.
Sure.
They have a lot of issues with spare parts, maintenance, and you know, we're obviously going to expand. They'll be the next steps into the international market, potentially next year. And then into 2025, that's where I see Opla going.
Now, and to be clear, you're not exactly, the way I understand it, you wouldn't exactly be removing the driller position. You'd be moving that driller
exactly
somewhere remote where they could potentially be servicing multiple rigs at a time because of the ability to automate. So
correct.
I think that's a brilliant idea, and obviously it decreases everything in the world from exposure to miles driven to all of the concerns that we could spend another 2.5-3 hours talking about.
But yep.
Those are amazing directions, and I have no doubt that Opal is going to get there. And I just appreciate you guys, you know, taking time this morning to sit down and again, give me a little bit of rundown on the company and getting to meet you guys. And again, congrats on the awards. Congrats on your 1 year.
Thank you.
That's awesome. And, man, I can't wait to meet you guys back here in a year and discuss exactly what's changed. I would imagine a lot.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
We'll be here.
Outstanding. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Justin.
Bye-bye. Street Smart Podcast, OTC edition, sitting here with Dave Hoffman and, damn.
Sean Cody.
It's been a long day. First of all, Sean, I'm sorry.
You're good.
We're and they're with Opla Energy, and Dave can attest to it. Long day. He came in from Canada bright and early this morning.
You betcha. Yeah.
So Dave is COO of both Citadel Drilling and Opla, and Sean is VP of Ops and Engineering for Opla.
Yeah.
And so I've seen banners around, and you guys won a couple of awards here at the show. You want to talk about those? So
yeah.
What were they for?
So we won two different ones. One was for our hardware or our pressure management device, PMD, and one was for our software, Opla Smart.
And so the pressure control device, what is first of all, let's go back. What does Opla do, and what role are they looking to solve in the market?
So we're a managed pressure drilling provider. And we supply everything from A to Z that goes along with that. So engineering services, pre-well planning, actual equipment, and then personnel. And, yeah, that's about it.
Primary focus is on optimization, performance drilling, and automation, trying to modernize the way we do business.
Right, and you guys got your start, like, you know, Opla, when was Opla founded?
2019.
So, good time to start, 2019, 2020 was what
great
it was,
time.
Right?
Yeah, great time.
There's so many people I talk to that started businesses either just before or right in the middle of. And so, it's always kind of fascinating to me, you know, the ones that are still standing obviously had either a great product or great people or a combination of both, right? And so your product, is it new to the marketplace or is it an improvement on something that existed before?
It's a bit of both, I'd say. So it's new to the market in we've completely redesigned your typical MPD manifold or dual choke system into an integrated device. So that design and that hardware is what has won one of those awards. And I'd say the overall philosophy that we're after, like Dave mentioned, with automation and performance is somewhat new in the MPD space. It's been done in the past, but it's not your traditional early kick loss detection and what MPD is used for a lot in the market. We're more after performance drilling and trying to shave days off drilling curves.
When you guys first came to market with that, how well was it received? I mean, a lot of times, I've seen this with Wildcat Oil Tools, the company I work for. We brought some proprietary tools that were, you know, technologies out there that existed, whether it was whipstocks or something like that. But we do it this other way, trying to get adoption sometimes in the oil and gas industry can be a bit challenging. How did you guys find that process when you guys were coming to market?
So from our standpoint, it can be difficult for sure. We do have our relationship between the drilling contractor side of things with Citadel Drilling, and it allowed us to work together to create a model that kept the contractor in mind, so that it was a little more easily accepted because we weren't just throwing something on the contractor. We were doing it from a contractor's perspective instead of just a win-win for the one oil field service company. It's based on both companies or both business lines being able to gain efficiencies from it.
And you were able to show like tangible efficiencies before you really went to the contractors and said, this is ready to go?
For sure. We definitely have a little bit of an R&D ground, having our own rigs to work on, for sure. And we spent some time field testing, proving. We had good relationships internally with our own operators that allowed us to get some time under our belts and didn't skewer us if there was some level of failure or learning along the way.
Yeah, that is helpful for sure, to be able to have that kind of proving ground and then be able to say, here are actual results. Did you guys have anybody say, well, those are, you know, cooked results?
No. Yeah. It's always a transparency partnership, right? So it's upfront with everybody, and that's the only way it was going to work. If we tried to just force something on someone, then likely 2020 would have eroded us to the point where we wouldn't have had an operation.
Yeah, I think that did a lot to kind of bring out a lot of things people might have kind of swept under the rug for a while. 2020 was kind of a purification process for a lot of things. Yeah. And so that's one side of it, is the equipment, and then you won the award for that. What was the award you won here for that?
For the equipment?
Yeah.
Well, it was just the overall design of the PMD. So, I mean, we have a lot of different patents and R&D that went into that, but... So it takes your traditional dual manifold package, which is, you know, C-can size skid, and integrates it into the RCD, so it's more of a coffee table size. So, and fits right on top of the BOPs, and there's nothing really else out there that can do that in a dual choke setup.
And so with that setup, there's proprietary software, I would assume, is the other thing you won the award for, that takes the data that thing's driving and sort of aggregates it? Or how does that work? Is it complementary, obviously, to the equipment, right?
It's complementary.
Automates the functionality, I guess.
Yeah, it drives the automation, and it drives another big part of our business, which is the IoT side of it. So there's obviously been, and COVID was a bit of a driver to this too, getting people off the rig site and out of the line of fire for a number of reasons, HSE and cost efficiencies and ESG and all those things. But
all of the acronyms you can think of, yeah.
Yeah.
And human capital, as we know, is difficult these days.
Yeah, labor issues. So, that IoT portion of it was big for us, and a big part of, like, day one with the partnership with Citadel is a lot of the unmanned options that are out there aren't really unmanned. They're just pushing that labor onto the driller. And
right.
So
it's less manned solution. Yeah.
It just moves the labor into the other person's hands. We find as a contractor, there's a lot of oil field services that do have these unmanned opportunities, but it does become something the driller has to manage or look after. In the modern day doghouse, you know, he's super saturated already. He or she, I suppose, have so many things on the go, and there's so many lines that are going on. Just taking a piece of equipment, dropping it off on site, and say, okay, you take care of that, isn't what we were after with Opla, because then we wouldn't have been focusing on the automation like we had. And
yeah, you were looking for true like automation, not we're going to shift the onus of this to another person. And that, yeah, you're right. That a lot of times people will say, a different example of that was like, so my background's in HSE, and we would say we're going to go paperless. And so you digitize all your forms and hand someone an iPad, and you're like, give you a heavier piece of paper, right? And it's kind of the same concept. And so the software package that you guys created just is, you know, it complements that and helps truly automate that process, right?
For sure. Yeah. For sure. I wouldn't say anything in today's world is one button automation to that level yet. Automated functions, automated connections, all of these things work, but there's still the opportunity to have one individual watching multiple wells in a remote capacity in
gotcha.
You know, an office in Houston, or we have a RTOC in Houston and one in Calgary.
Is it is the software then also collecting data points and learning along the way and being able to say, okay, well, this well condition is similar to one or several that we've encountered, and so it can help you kind of predict what to expect? Is it capable of doing that?
Yeah, we have some machine learning built into it. So along with IoT, we have our own cloud infrastructure and stuff. So we do have some machine learning and some smart features where connections is a good example. We'll perform a connection. If it's good, our machine learning will pick up on that. Doesn't do anything, no changes. If it's could use some adjusting and different parameters, it'll send. It's like, hey, this could be better. This is what you can do to make it better. And I mean, that goes along with the same different levels of automation. That's a progression to eventually those will just be implemented automatically. But with machine learning and stuff, it takes time too.
Sure. How do you guys see AI helping or hurting? How do you guys see AI fitting, I guess, into, you know, your business model with the automation and all of that stuff? How do you see AI fitting into that?
It just helps in driving different automation of different functions. So I think it goes hand in hand with machine learning and AI, and just all those little buttons that you need to press and all those little parameters you need to change to get things functioning smoothly that a human's had to do. It's just taking those out of their hands and doing it automatically. And it's really driving that process to be more hands-off, and the ability to have people in remote centers that are hundreds or thousand miles away watching multiple wells rather than two guys per shift on a rig that, you know, labor shortages can't really support anymore, that model.
At the end of the day, too, consistency creates efficiency, right? So if you can have a consistent performance based on the learnings that are taking place, you will be more efficient, and ultimately that's what we're trying to do. You're not always looking for low-hanging fruit. You're not always looking for days. You're looking for fractions of time that'll allow efficiencies to create and gain, and multiple fractions end up being a win for all of us, including the operator.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you can shave off, even if it's a fraction, you know, in the aggregate, you know, a lot of times you're making up huge savings, obviously. So you just got here to OTC. You've been here most of the day. I've heard, this is my first time at OTC, so it's kind of unique to me. And I'm like, well, this is a big conference. And everybody I talk to is like, it's not as big as it's been. And so do you guys have any frame of reference you can share with me? How do you feel about the conference? Obviously, the COVID and that type of stuff sort of dampened the scope of it, I think, some. But is it looks like it's pretty good. Like, I feel like it's a pretty good conference.
Yeah, in our view, it's the mecca of drilling in North America. Obviously, everyone's here. Mm-hmm. Business lines all from A to Z. It's definitely impressive to me. I honestly haven't been here before either. This is my first go. But speaking with some colleagues, this is a little bit smaller than it had been previous to COVID. But I mean, gaining traction to get back to where it should be.
This is my first time here too. I don't really have a frame of reference, but
so we're all fresh.
A bunch of newbies sitting there. Yeah, I was hoping you guys would give me some feedback, but everybody's like, "Oh, looks good. Looks good." Except everyone else you talked to that's been here once before, maybe.
Yeah.
So this is great. So when you guys think about, and you hear all of this in the news a lot of times, you know, you mentioned all of the acronyms, the ESGs and all that stuff. How do you see that ultimately impacting Opla and what you guys are seeking to, you know, achieve with your pressure control devices and the automation and everything? How do you see ESG or even the transition away from fossil fuels? How are you guys looking at that, and what are you guys doing to prepare to live in that world?
From our standpoint, one of the best things we can do ESG-wise is to create less time on wells. So at the end of the day, our footprint is a direct correlation to how many days we're spending on a well. So if we can create an efficiency that helps limit those days, speed up the process, and ultimately control some of the other aspects of potential loss, then we're adding to the success of all ESG plans within the company. As far as transition, I mean, modernization is going to take place, automation is going to take place. These are all things that we want to get better to be better, I guess is my thought on it.
Yeah. I'd say that's the big one, is reducing days on a well. I mean, that's like something tangible and real that you can
an actual metric you can write down
right away. Yeah. There's other stuff too, like electrification of parts. All of our components are electric. Smaller footprint, so less steel, less everything that goes into building one of these units compared to something else, and moving operations remote. So instead of flying guys all over the continent or driving or whatever it might be, you have that a little bit centralized and reducing that. So, I mean, there's smaller steps that go into a lot of different pieces of it too.
For sure.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. It's definitely something that's not going to go anywhere. People are going to have to really account for that in their business models. And I was standing around, we were watching these sessions over here, and I heard someone remark, it's been a long time since they've ever seen a technology session in oil and gas full of people. And oil and gas, in my experience, has always been very slow to modernize or to change. You know, if it works that way, we're going to do it that way, even if there might be a better way that we have to figure out. Are you guys starting to see on your end a lot more adoption from the oil and gas community around modernizing and technology and using technology to be more efficient and better?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a big push across the board. So both our companies we're started in Canada. Canada, much aligned with the U.S., is very similar in that sense that, in order to do business, you have to continue to get better, and you have to prove your worth, and those that choose to not progress with the modernization of how you do it, then will likely go by the wayside with time. That's just going to happen. It's fact.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's a sad reality. You're going to have to keep progressing. If you're not going forward, you're just going to die eventually.
In order to access capital, in order to get funding for future builds, for future processes, you're going to have to be able to meet some criteria that shows that you're a good steward as well.
Absolutely. So when you guys are looking at where you are now, in like you said, Opla started 2019. And here it is, 2023. Are you guys Is this the trajectory you would have predicted? What'd you learn along the way? Are there things that you started off saying it's going to be like this, and now you're like, well, man, we had to do it this way, or did everything just work out perfectly?
Definitely not that. Well, COVID definitely threw a wrench in our plans. Basically everything.
Just yours?
Yeah.
Yeah, just everybody's your plans.
End of the world.
Everybody's plans. Yeah, right. So we changed plans quite drastically through that. And it seems like even every year, I mean, you come up with a plan, but...
you put forecast and structure in, but obviously there's pivot points that take place. I think overall, our scale, our speed at which we're scaling changed. We opted to move forward faster than we anticipated originally. Mm-hmm. We really were trying to understand the RD process. We spent enough quality time in that process before we laid out what the rest of the plan was going to be and the rest of the structure was going to be. So it ultimately changed dramatically in the last 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
What was the trigger point for you guys where you said, hey, we're going to accelerate our scaling rather than, you know, carry on the way we are?
Proof of concept. We proved the equipment, we proved the automation, and we successfully deployed it and had good success, had good operator feedback. I mean, there was learnings along the way for sure. There's always going to be learnings. Sure. But at the end of the day, there's an opportunity. Market swings a little bit. There's an uptick, and everything's a bit busier, and timing. There's no better time than present, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I know it makes sense to do it if you can. But a lot of companies, a lot of times, I think companies, especially when they're in the first few years, they're so being able to pivot sometimes is tough.
Yeah.
And so it's great that you guys were able to do that. And so one question has nothing to do with any of this, other than I'm just curious about it. When you were a little boy, what did you want to be?
You know, I wanted to be a fishing game officer, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you wanted to be a fed telling people they couldn't fish or hunt there.
I guess so, yeah.
Outstanding.
I ended up being a roughneck, so.
Well, hey, close, huh?
Close, yeah.
What about you?
Firefighter.
Standard answer.
Yeah.
Standard guy answer. Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too. Firefighter. Yeah. And then later was architect, and then I didn't do any of those things whatsoever.
So to be fair, I don't think I wanted to tell people what to do. I just wanted to drive around a truck all day out in the bush, right? So.
Listen, I think what you're describing, I think here we call them game wardens in Texas.
Yeah.
They have so much jurisdiction. They have more than actual law enforcement. They are law enforcement, but like, they can just come look in your freezers and do whatever. It's a pretty intense amount of jurisdiction, but I can think of worse jobs, getting to drive around the wilderness in a truck the state gave you.
Yeah.
That'd be all right. Well, great. So what's something you guys want people to know about OPLA that obviously we didn't cover, but looking out for going in the future, 2024 and beyond, what are you guys thinking?
I would say that... you know, like all service companies, we're just uber focused on being a service provider, and we want to do the best job possible. And in order to do that, we want to listen to the clients, create opportunity for success. Success for the client creates success for us. Connection to what we're doing and super passionate about what we're doing. And the growth model that we have is going to allow us the speed to scale at a point where we will be a noticeable operation, and we are now. Don't hear that wrong, but
well, you got a couple of awards.
Yeah,
somebody
yeah.
noticing what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure, and look forward to a long-lasting success model like that.
Great, Sean. What do you think? You can't say ditto.
Yeah. I think it's just some things are. I mean, we've been hyper-focused on technology and R&D and building something different over the past couple of years, and now we're obviously transitioning a bit, so coming with that scaling up can be hard to maintain operational excellence, and I think that's just an area that we we want to be hyper-focused on and continue to deliver from a small MPD provider to whatever we end up growing into. So, yeah, just a focus on that.
It's great that you have that perspective. I think so many companies get focused on that growth and lose sight of the fact that if you don't focus on that piece of it, it's not sustainable. You're going to end up going back and having to essentially reinvent the wheel on that side of things. So I you can't go wrong focusing there for sure. And so, well, I know you guys have got an awards ceremony starting soon and a place you've got to be. But I really appreciate your time and congrats on the success. Congrats on your awards. And I know you guys are proud of those achievements. And I look forward to following Opla and continued success and seeing what you guys do.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
Glad you're able to make it down. I know the travel was probably a little tight. And so
it'll be worth
it,
though, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, well, thank you guys so much, and best of luck the rest of the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.